Hello, it's Monday, the first day of August, and welcome to a new week here on Korea 24. I'm your host, Kwon Jang-woo. South Korea logged a trade deficit for the fourth consecutive month in July. It's the first time in 14 years that the nation has seen such a deficit streak. We'll have more details in news briefing shortly. South Korea and the US agreed last week to expand joint military drills and resume their strategic dialogue on extended deterrence. And we discuss the implications for the Korean Peninsula in our in-depth today. And then coming up on Monday's Sports Roundup, we preview the start of the new Premier League season for Son Heung-min. You have all that and more on today's Korea 24. South Korea's trade balance last month saw red once again, coming in at a deficit despite record exports for the month of July. This was fueled by the high cost of energy imports. Meanwhile, demand for electricity in the country reached an all-time high in July as well. For more on these and other headlines of the day, we're joined in the studio by KBS World Radio News Editor Eunice Kim. Eunice, hello.
Happy 1st of August, Jang-ho.
Yes, happy 1st of August, and it's good to have you back, Eunice.
Thank you.
So we have a few energy-related headlines to kick off the warmest month of the year. But first, let's unpack that trade-related headline. South Korea logging a trade deficit for a fourth straight month in July. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, that's right. It wasn't a weak month for South Korean exports, as you noted, relatively speaking, as outbound shipments did post a 9.4% growth from July of last year, coming in at $60.7 billion. The Ministry of Trade, Industry and Energy on Monday saying the tally was the largest for any July, eclipsing the last standing record of $55.5 billion logged July of last year. Exports continue to post growth 21 months in a row despite monetary tightening measures in major economies, with semiconductors, petroleum products, and autos leading the gains. The trade deficit, however, comes as the value of imports far outpaced exports last month, jumping by 21.8% to nearly $65.4 billion over the cited period. Leading those gains is the global trend of high energy costs, including crude oil and gas. The trade ministry said the trade deficit, which South Korea has now logged for a fourth straight month since April, is not unique, but that it is seen in many energy import-reliant economies, including Japan, Germany, and France.
Meanwhile, we're seeing a bit of an easing of prices at the pump. The cost of gasoline prices has dipped to the 1,800 won per litre range for the first time in several months, Eunice.
Yeah, for the first time in early March, if you can recall that far back. The Energy Ministry said on Monday that the average price of gasoline at stations nationwide stood at 1,897.31 per litre as of Sunday, which is down 247.61 from June 30th. This comes as 1 month ago, July 1st, the government had implemented an expanded fuel tax cut of 37%. The ministry forecast, however, that diesel prices will remain higher than gasoline prices. Global diesel prices are expected to stay at high levels due to restrictions in Europe's diesel imports resulting from sanctions on Russia.
And as I mentioned earlier, demand for electricity in the country also rose to a fresh monthly record last month as people across the country tried to escape the stifling heat. Mm-hmm. So how do the numbers break down?
Well, according to the Korea Power Exchange on Monday, the average monthly maximum electricity demand for July reached a record 82,007 megawatts, which is up a full percent from the same period last year. The new record comes as power demand surged to an all-time high of nearly 93,000 megawatts on July 7th, breaking the previous daily record of 92,478 megawatts that was set on July 24th, 2018. With the demand surge, the country's power reserves dipped to 7.2%, making that the third time the figure slipped below the 10% threshold in the month of July. But we are not out of the woods yet. The government projects South Korea will see its highest electricity demand in the second week of August. That's just next week, with the rising mercury levels.
Right. The country, though, was under the influence of two typhoons over the weekend, the effect of which is expected to continue into the week, right?
Right. Brace yourself for more precipitation. Both Typhoon Songda and Typhoon Troze had weakened to a tropical depression by Monday morning, but the weather agency, the KMA, said they continue to push large amounts of hot and humid air toward South Korea. The KMA also forecasts the northern parts of Gyeonggi Province will see up to 100 millimeters of rain through Tuesday, while 20 to 70 millimeters of rain is expected for the Seoul metro area, western parts of Gangwon Province, and Jeju's mountainous regions. The rest of the nation is set to see 5 to 40 millimeters of rain.
In other news, President Yoon Suk-yeol began his week-long summer vacation today. And despite earlier noted plans to head out of town, it seems he will be staying put for now.
Right. There are some substantial outstanding political issues on the table, not to mention national priorities amid this ongoing global economic downturn. And sources at the presidential office and ruling camp are telling domestic news outlets that the president and the first lady have canceled their plans to travel outside of the capital city, presumably with the intention to spend the time in their private home going over key state affairs. According to a source, President Yoon will listen to opinions from various people during his time off as he looks back on the 12 weeks since his inauguration. He, of course, has been plagued by falling approval ratings, the latest of which puts approval in the 20% range, and his ruling People Power Party is rocked by disagreements within its leadership.
Turning to COVID headlines next, a second booster shot for people in their 50s picked up today as phone monitoring of elderly patients recovering at home came to a halt. Can you tell us more?
Sure. Let's begin with the latter, shall we? The once-daily check-in calls given to at-home COVID patients 60 years and older are now no longer. Should they come down with symptoms, they will now have to visit respiratory disease treatment facilities just like the other patients for face-to-face medical care. Having said that, we are still amid an upsurge in infections, and as such, health authorities expand eligibility for the second round of COVID-19 booster shots to those in their 50s, which began today for those who had reservations. Adults with underlying health conditions also are now eligible for a fourth shot, along with patients and workers at facilities with populations vulnerable to COVID-19, such as nursing homes and homeless shelters.
And can you give us an update on the latest COVID infection figures?
Sure. New COVID-19 cases did come in below 50,000 on Monday, likely on the back of fewer tests over the weekend. The KDCA saying there were 44,689 infections reported throughout the previous day, including 436 from overseas. The tally marks a rise equivalent to 1.2 times what it was a week ago and 1.7 times from 2 weeks earlier, not quite the week-over-week doubling trend we've seen in recent weeks. Doubling does, though, persist for the number of critically ill patients, which came in at 287. That figure nearly doubled from a week ago and increased 3.5 times from 2 weeks earlier. Sunday also added 21 COVID-related deaths.
And finally, I understand the Defense Ministry has released details on the upcoming joint military drills of the U.S.
Right. The report holding the details was submitted to the Parliamentary National Defense Committee on Monday. The Ulchi Freedom Shield exercise, of course, set to take place between the allies August 22nd through September 1st. And according to it, South Korean and U.S. military authorities will conduct their exercise in three stages, the first stage amounting to the initial response and joint crisis management in the event of a North Korea attack. The second stage, a transition to a war footing and repelling North Korean forces while defending the capital region. And the final stage, focusing on securing the safety of the metropolitan area as well as launching counterattacks. Through the drills, the ministry says it is aiming to operate a means to deter war that integrates diplomacy, information, the military, and the economy, while also mastering joint crisis management efforts.
That's all for our news briefing today. Thank you for those updates.
You bet.
South Korea and the United States have agreed to expand joint military drills and resume their strategic dialogue on extended deterrence. This was confirmed during talks between the South Korean Defense Minister Lee Jong-sup and his U.S. counterpart Lloyd Austin in Washington last Friday. The agreement came after North Korean leader Kim Jong-un used a fiery rhetoric to threaten the allies in a speech to mark the 69th anniversary of the Korean War armistice. To get some expert analysis on the tensions on the Korean Peninsula, we're joined on the line now by Dr. Bruce Bennett, an adjunct international and defense researcher at the RAND Corporation. Dr. Bennett, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
Let's start with those threats from Kim Jong-un. Last Thursday, North Korean state media reported that during a speech at a ceremony marking the 69th anniversary of Victory Day, Kim warned that the Yoon Suk-yeol government and the South Korean military will be annihilated should it make any quote-unquote dangerous attempts against the North. What was notable was that this was the first time that Kim had mentioned Yoon Suk-yeol by name. Kim added that the North's armed forces are fully prepared to respond to any crisis and his country is willing to use its nuclear weapons against the US and South Korea. So, Dr. Bennett, what did you make of Kim's remarks?
Well, I think Kim was very used to reacting to Moon Jae-in and how to deal with Moon Jae-in effectively for Kim's objectives. President Yoon is a different individual, and I think what he's discovering is his approach to President Moon isn't working with President Yoon. He does all those missile launches earlier this year. What does he get? He gets increased exercises, which he really doesn't want. He gets increased alliance cooperation, which he really doesn't want. He's been getting exactly the opposite of what he wants. Now, this reflects a certain degree of Kim Jong-un's paranoia and self-justification. He's got to claim outside hostility to deal with his failings with food and other goods and so forth. And so he's got to ask, does he really think the South is ready for a dangerous attempt against the North? I don't think so. Don't think the South wants anything like that. Certainly the U.S. doesn't. So he's making this up in part. This is his paranoia speaking. And he's got to have some excuses for a nuclear test, for other missile tests. But you got to ask, if Kim really were to use his nuclear weapons, does he really want to die? Because the U.S. threat is, if Kim uses nuclear weapons, the regime will not survive. So he's got to start thinking about what he's doing and trying to get the right kind of reaction.
Okay, what reaction is he trying to get then? What's the motive behind these threatening remarks?
Oh, I think he's trying to justify his problems internally. North Korea has traditionally always focused on claiming that their problems are due to the outside, to U.S. and Iraq hostility. We're causing the problems with their economy. We're forcing them to build new military capabilities and so forth, when in reality, that's not the case. But he's got to create this hostile environment, making it sound that way to justify his problems. I think he's also anxious to be able to do some more tests within certain constraints. And what we don't know is what he's got available. How many missiles does he have available? Does he have a nuclear weapon that's really ready? Those are interesting questions.
Right, so providing the context for perhaps more provocations down the line. Now, these remarks come as the South Korean defense minister was in the U.S. He met with the U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin, and they met in Washington on Friday, 50 days after they held talks on the sidelines of the Asia Security Summit, also known as the Shangri-La Dialogue in Singapore in June. What would you say was the significance of this latest meeting between the two defense chiefs?
Well, I think it's important. So much of the U.S. focus right now is on Ukraine and on Russia and things going on in Europe, that it's important for South Korea to make a serious effort to create visibility for the alliance within the United States. And so the defense minister coming to the United States does that in part. But also the U.S. and South Korea had fallen into a trap of really failing to deter North Korean provocations. Look at all of the missile launches earlier this year. You know, if North Korea was going to launch an ICBM, shouldn't the U.S. and South Korea have been doing something to deter that? And when they did launch one, what was it we did to punish North Korea to try to reestablish deterrence? Really wasn't anything. And so this is trying for the two of them to get together both for political purposes, but also to strengthen our deterrence right now, make it so that we are restraining North Korea by having appropriate policies.
Right. Well, the headline outcomes of that meeting was the fact that the two sides agreed to expand an upcoming joint military exercise and then also restart their strategic dialogue on extended deterrence. The two sides have also agreed to conduct theater-level combined training in this year's summertime joint exercise based on the concept of a quote-unquote all-out war. A joint South Korea-U.S. military drill is set to begin in late August and run until early September, essentially resuming their Ulchi Freedom Guardian exercise 5 years after scrapping them to help foster inter-Korean relations. What are your thoughts on the resumption of the allies' joint military exercises?
Oh, I think this is a wonderful idea. This, you know, you would never take a soccer team and send it into a big match without training them first. That would be ridiculous. And similar kind of principle applies to the military. If you want our military forces to work well together and work well within the U.S. side and the South Korean side, we have to do training together. It's a fundamental principle of military capabilities. So this resumption of the field training part of the exercises, we had fallen back to just doing computer simulations and helps train the staff within the headquarters, but it isn't training the soldiers to work together in the same kind of way. This resumption with now what is, I'm told, being called Ulchi Freedom Shield is a great idea. It's a good action by both sides, but it also demonstrates to Kim how he fouled up. He did the wrong thing. He doesn't want this kind of exercise, and yet he's really pushed us into it. So he's got nobody to blame but himself. And then we have to start thinking, what's an all-out war going to be like now? Kim has probably 50 or more nuclear weapons. If that's the case, is an all-out war going to occur without nuclear weapon use? That's pretty unlikely. And so the U.S. and South Korean forces have not had the opportunity to train to think about how they would operate in a nuclear environment. It's not that that's impossible to do. That was the character of almost all U.S. and NATO training in Europe in the 1980s. And so now it's time to reapply those lessons. And so this is really a critical time to be out there training and trying to learn how Kim has changed the environment with his increased threat and make sure our forces can work well together.
Right. So that's preparing for the worst case scenario in the long term. But in the short term, how do you think then Kim Jong-un will respond to these joint military drills? You said yourself that he hates them. What sort of level do you think we should expect a response?
Well, he's going to be very unhappy, but he's going to be stuck. He's going to be of two minds because his natural tendency is to react very strongly and escalate and try and push us to back off. But he's also learned this year that that's getting him exactly the wrong outcome. So he's going to be thinking about being careful and trying to figure out how to undercut our increased alliance cooperation. That's going to be difficult for him. He's got a tough problem to figure out. He may make a mistake. He may decide to restart missile tests or do a nuclear test, but we're not sure he's got the capability to do those things. You know, there's been lots of discussion in Korea about Kim doing a TAC nuke test. TAC nukes usually mean weapons that have a yield of something between 1 and 20 kilotons of yield. Well, that describes the first five North Korean nuclear weapon tests. Only the sixth test by North Korea was not a tactical size weapon. So Kim has done tactical nuclear tests before. He may not have had a weapon that was adequately miniaturized, but if he does another test of a 10 kiloton weapon, how's anyone going to know if that's an advance in his capability? The worrisome thing is he may be trying instead to go to a strategic weapon that's even bigger than his sixth nuclear test. The question he's got to face is, one, can he do it? Can his scientists produce such a thing? And two, if he does, what's going to be the U.S. and ROC reaction and the world reaction, which is probably going to be pretty unfavorable to him? Is he going to be worse off for having done it? And that's entirely possible.
Well, if North Korea does indeed carry out this nuclear test of some sort, what response do you expect from South Korea and the U.S.? What response should they take, do you think?
Well, so that gets to the fundamentals of deterrence. What we're anxious to do with the deterrence is not just prevent war. We've done a good job of that. We've prevented war since 1953. What we've got to now do is to prevent Kim's provocations, or at least to rein them in. The deterrence concept turns on doing some combination of denial and punishment. Well, it's hard to deny North Korea a test. If they're going to do a test, they can do a test, and we're not going to go in and bomb a test site or something like that. So the key here is punishment is the key to deterrence. We've got to be prepared to tell Kim, if you do a nuclear test, here are the consequences. And vague descriptions are ambiguous approach to deterrence hasn't worked very well on provocations in the past. The U.S. and South Korea probably need to be telling Kim, here are some of the kinds of things we're prepared to do that you won't like. And note the key here is Kim's got to not like it. It's got to be a personal kind of thing because he's the decision maker.
Sure.
If it hurts the Korean, North Korean people, doesn't matter a great deal because he doesn't care about his people. It's got to affect him. So key part here is it's probably got to involve some form of information operations. He's absolutely terrorized about outside information getting in and affecting his people. That's probably where we've got to be focused on trying to threaten him that if he does something, we will up the amount of outside information we are trying to get into North Korea.
Right, so especially with sanctions not deterring and not many sanctions cards left, it seems, especially with China and Russia's position at the UN, this sort of information war is perhaps something that you're saying the allies should be looking into.
Oh, absolutely. We've done much of the sanctions we can do. We can't just go out and seize North Korean ships carrying coal to China. That's not exactly something that is allowed by international trade rules. So, the leakage is occurring. China's thoroughly supporting leakage into North Korea. We've got to ask, what can we do? So, for example, the U.S. and South Korea could make millions of USB drives that have K-dramas and K-pop.
Sure.
Kim has been terrorized by those kinds of things and just really instituted major punishments. U.S. and South Korea could arrange to deliver hundreds of thousands of those to the Pyongyang area, not the DMZ area, but to Pyongyang, using drones or other vehicles. That's something that Kim would probably be very concerned about. But you've got to threaten that before he does the nuclear test if you want to convince him not to do it.
Well, in the meantime, we'll see how North Korea responds to the South Korea-US joint drills, which start on August 22nd. We'll wrap it up there. We'll be speaking to Dr. Bruce Bennett at the RAND Corporation. Thank you once again for your time.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock and Forex Update.
The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index rose 0.75 points, or 0.03% on Monday, to close the day at 2,452.25. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ also rose, gaining 3.99 points, or 0.50%, to close at 807.61. On the foreign exchange, the local currency weakened 4.91 against the dollar, ending the day at 1,304.1.
You can check Korean stock and forex closings at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next up, it's Korea Trending, a daily segment looking at some of the other news stories that have been attracting attention online today. And to bring us those stories, we have Walter Lee joining us in the studio. Walter, hello. It's good to see you.
Hello, Jung-ho. It's always great to be here.
Okay, what stories do you have for us today?
Okay, so first, we'll explore the rise in the number of non-family households in South Korea. Then we'll discuss the tragic death of a construction worker who was tasked with taking down the stage of singer Psy's summer concert over the weekend. And finally, we'll talk about Blackpink's comeback scheduled for next month.
Okay, so we start with some new data about how Korean households are changing. Can you tell us more?
Yes, so South Korea is seeing a continued increase in non-family households as the number of individuals living together with those not related by blood, such as friends or partners, exceeded 1 million for the first time last year. According to the Korean Statistical Information Service database of Statistics Korea on Monday, non-family households reached 472,660 households last year, the highest number ever since statistics were compiled. This is an increase of 11.6% from the year before.
Wow, so that is quite a steep jump indeed. Can you tell us a bit more? What constitutes a non-family household exactly?
That's a good question. So a non-family household was defined as a residence consisting of 1 to 5 people who are not blood relatives. So examples include several friends living together or couples who are not legally married. The classification excludes those in living facilities. Now in 2021, the number of people who are members of non-family households reached around 1,015,000, which compared to 2016 figures is an increase of around 74%. By region, Gyeonggi Province had the highest number of non-relative households with around 126,000, followed by Seoul with 99,555. Such an increase came while the number of single-person households exceeded 7 million last year for the first time since 1980.
Now, these figures come as there has been some controversy over what the South Korean government classifies as a household, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So there have been calls to change the government's definition of a household, as currently there are laws and regulations specifically tailored around families. This includes income tax deductions for spouses, as well as separate slots for newlyweds in the bidding system for new apartments.
Right, so as the living habits of the population changes and becomes more diverse, there are essentially calls for the government to keep up. And this latest data shows that the situation is indeed changing at a very fast pace.
Yes.
Let's move on to our next story. What do you have for us?
Yes. So a Mongolian man in his 20s has died while dismantling the stage of Singer Psy's annual concert Summer Swag on Sunday, according to an official statement by the artist's agency P Nation. Now, the man fell 15 metres to his death while taking down a lighting tower at the Gangneung Stadium in Gangwon Province. He is said to have been hired by a subcontractor that specialises in building stage structures.
Yes, this is indeed tragic news. Mm-hmm. Do we know the circumstances of how he fell exactly?
Well, it's worth noting that there was heavy rain in the region on Sunday, with the daily rainfall being 11.5 millimetres. Now, Gangneung police believe that the deceased slipped and fell while working on the five-storey steel structure. He was found in cardiac arrest and was transferred to a hospital, where he was sadly declared deceased. Police, along with the Ministry of Employment and Labour, will be investigating the exact cause of the accident, specifically whether the recently enacted Serious Accidents Punishment Act can be applied to this case.
Right, we have talked about this act on our show before. Can you remind our listeners about the law?
Yes, so the Serious Accidents Punishment Act came into force on January 27th of this year. Now, it stipulates punishment for business owners or executives who cause serious accidents by failing to keep appropriate safety and health measures. If one or more deaths occur due to an accident, imprisonment of at least 1 year or a fine of up to 1 billion won, which is roughly around $760,000, can be imposed. If an accident that results in two or more injured persons requiring treatment for more than 6 months or longer has occurred, a punishment of a maximum of 7 years imprisonment or a fine of up to 100 million won can be imposed. That's around $76,000.
Yes, and if the law is applied to this case, the question will be whether Psy himself becomes directly liable.
Yes.
Now, this terrible news comes as the tour was already facing criticism on various fronts, such as the show's use of 300 tons of water in the middle of a drought, as well as warnings from the Korea Disease Control and Prevention Agency about wet masks putting the audience more at risk of becoming infected with COVID-19. So what did Psy's agency say in the statement issued on Sunday?
Well, the agency extended its condolences to the bereaved family and stated that it would do its best to, quote, take care of the deceased's last path, unquote. Now, P Nation added that it will take measures to prevent another accident from happening again. The agency has issued no statement on the five shows that are left in Psy's nationwide tour. The next concert in Yeosu is scheduled for this Saturday.
Yes, you would think that there would have been some safety precautions in place to prevent this sort of accident. Hopefully an investigation can get to the bottom whether this was just an unfortunate accident or whether there was a professional negligence, and the authorities respond accordingly. Let's move on to our final story. Some more upbeat news from the entertainment world, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. So K-pop girl group Blackpink will be making a comeback with a studio album release set for September. Blackpink's agency YG Entertainment teased the comeback in a video trailer on their official website on Monday, announcing the schedule of the album release.
Yes, so what do we know about the upcoming album?
Well, according to the video, the album is called Born Pink, and the 30-second trailer features what seems to be one of the group's new songs as its background music. Other details released also show that a pre-release single is scheduled for August, the album released in September, and a world tour in October. The exact dates for the song and details about the world tour, such as the location, have not yet been announced.
Okay, so if we go in order, a pre-release single in August, the long-awaited second album in September, and then a world tour starting in October. It seems like YG is pulling out all the stops for the group's return then.
Yeah, that's correct. So this is Blackpink's first comeback as a group in about a year and 10 months. And the company has promised that the up-and-coming album will be fitting of the phrase, best in history. Now, YG Entertainment has said that the two most expensive music videos in the company's history are in the works for the album. And the agency has also said that the world tour will be on a larger scale than ever before.
Right, looks like they're really going to cause quite a stir. Okay, that's where we're going to leave it for today's Career Trending. Thank you for those stories, Walter, and we'll see you again next time.
See you next time.
We continue on now to Monday Sports Roundup, our weekly look at the world of Korean sports. And guiding us through that world, we have sports reporter Yoo Ji-ho from the Yonhap News Agency joining us on the line once again. Ji-ho, hello. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm good as well, thank you. We are now in the month of August, of course. And that means for fans of European football, this can only mean one thing. The new Premier League season is around the corner now. And of course, for Korean fans in particular, they'll be looking out for Son Heung-min at Tottenham Hotspur to see what else he can achieve after his last Golden Boot winning campaign. So, Ji-ho, start us off. The new season starts this weekend, right?
Yeah, it's incredible how fast the time flies, huh?
Indeed.
It seems like the season ended maybe last week, but they're getting ready for the new season. And Son Heung-min, of course, coming off that Golden Boot campaign for Tottenham Hotspur. And only a handful of players have won consecutive Golden Boots in Premier League history. And Son's teammate, Harry Kane, is the last one to do so back in 2016 and 2017. So Son will try to match that feat by his sidekick. And the first match for the Spurs will be against Southampton at 11 p.m. Saturday in Korean time. Obviously, high expectations for not just for Son, but the Spurs as a whole team. You know, they were one of the busier teams in the summer during the transfer window with maybe a half dozen signings. And, you know, they're going to be playing in four competitions, obviously the Premier League and the League Cup, FA Cup, and of course the Champions League that they will be making a return to after missing out for a couple of years. So they're going to need all the depth they could get to get through those matches. And obviously Sony will be a big part of that.
Right, and we saw from the open training session when Spurs were in Korea how hard the head coach Antonio Conte was pushing the team. So expectations are high with his first full preseason with the team. And of course, so we're looking forward to how Son does in the Champions League. Meanwhile, elsewhere in European football, the Korean centre-back Kim Min-jae finally joined Napoli in the top Italian league last week, and he has already made his preseason debut with the team against Mallorca on Sunday. I understand he made quite a strong start.
Yeah, he did. Sorry. Yeah, you know, he left Turkey to reach, I guess, the bigger stage, bigger competition with Napoli in Serie A, and he's going to get to test his mettle against some big boys of Europe. You know, they're going to be playing in the UEFA Champions League, and he's going to be in the tournament for the first time himself. He did play in the first half of Napoli's 1-1 draw with Mallorca. The Spanish club's Korean midfielder, Lee Kang-in, only played in the second half, so the Korean-Korean duo on the pitch did not materialize as Kim Min-jae only played in the first half. But he was his usual steady self as a center-back, neutralizing Mallorca's offense and making some really smart passes to midfielders and wingers. So he, I guess a small sample size, but he kind of did come as advertised. You know, he's going to be getting more, a little bit more attention, I guess, from the casual fans in Korea. He's going to be playing in Italy, Champions League, obviously, and it's going to be a big season for him also.
Yeah, it's good to see him finally move to Italy as well, one of the top leagues in the world, especially ahead of the World Cup. Hopefully, in the next few months, he can acclimatize to playing in Italy and bring that experience to help the national team in Qatar. While we're briefly talking about the national team, the men's team finished second in the EAFF East Asian Championships last week after losing to Japan 3-0. It was a chastening defeat, but as it was not a FIFA-sanctioned tournament, the Korean team were missing all of their players playing in Europe. So, Ji-ho, it showed how important players playing the European leagues are for the national team at the moment, right?
It does. And, you know, without Son Heung-min, without someone like, let's say, Hwang Hee-jo or Hwang Hee-chan, this is just a completely different team. And I guess it kind of shows also the lack of depth behind those guys. And, you know, it doesn't bode well for Korea's chances at the World Cup, because you're not going to be relying on these, you know, Europe-based guys all the time. You're playing in, let's say, group stage. You're playing three matches in a span of, you know, maybe a dozen or so days. And you're going to need some contributions from other guys that are maybe based in the K-League. And this tournament, EAFF Championship, was an opportunity for those guys to step up, to make their presence felt. And, you know, they failed miserably. There's no sugarcoating around it. I mean, this was not a very good match at all, to say the least. And, you know, I guess you asked me last week whether Paulo Bente had learned anything from this tournament. And I said not much at the time, but I guess maybe one thing he learned is maybe the K-League guys are maybe not good enough to warrant some spots in the World Cup team come November.
Right, so it looks like we're going to be relying heavily on our players playing in Europe. Hopefully they stay fit as well. Okay, well, we are sticking with football next, but moving on to the domestic K-League. The top two teams are once again pulling away from the pack, and they will square off for the third time this season on Sunday. The two teams are, of course, Ulsan Hyundai FC and Chungbuk Hyundai Motors. Jiho, how have they been playing of late?
Playing pretty well. You know, both teams won their matches on Saturday. Ulsan beating Gangwon FC 2-1 and Chungbuk defeating Jeju United 1-0. And the three teams right below them in the tables, the Pohang Steelers, Jeju and Incheon United, all lost over the weekend. So 50 points for Ulsan, 45 points for Chungbuk, and then Pohang behind them, they've got 37 points. So there's a bit of a gap. Not insurmountable, but as long as Ulsan and Chungbuk keep winning, I think everybody else will be playing for third place this year. And that has been the case the last 3 years as well. And Ulsan and Chungbuk will meet on Sunday for the third time this season. They did split the first two meetings. You know, they also have midweek games to play before that one. So Ulsan will be hosting FC Seoul on Tuesday night, and Chungbuk traveling to Gangwon to play them on the road on Wednesday. So a bit of a schedule crunch for a lot of the K-League clubs after a last-minute break was scheduled during the EAFF tournament in late July. So teams will be playing four matches between Tuesday and the 15th of August.
Okay, and let's get an update on the domestic baseball season as well. In the KBO, the SSG Landers will have a chance to further strengthen their grip on first place this week as they visit second-placed Kiwoom Heroes for a three-game series starting Tuesday. The Landers had the best record in July, and I'm sure they'll be looking to keep that going in August.
Yeah, no question about that. You know, they went 16-3 last month. That's an incredible 8.42 winning percentage, and that has given them a seven-game cushion over the Heroes, who lost three straight games before getting a tie against the NC Dinos last week. The Landers can potentially open up a 10-game lead by Thursday. You know, they're currently on pace to win 98 games, and that would be a record in the current 144-game schedule, which was put in place back in 2015. The current record is 93 victories. That's Doosan Bears from 2016 and again in 2018. And the Landers, you know what, I think they might even have a pretty good shot at winning 100 games this year, given the way they've been playing. They welcome back Seoul Marine pitcher Park Jong-hoon on Sunday. He missed about a year following his elbow operation, and he threw three shutout innings against the Kia Tigers. So things are looking up for them. And their five-man rotation is probably already the best in the league. And the two starting pitchers who helped build such a strong rotation, we're talking about No Kyung-eun and Oh Won-suk, they've actually been pushed back to the bullpen. So, you know, they've been in first place since literally day one this year, and they're going to try to become the first team ever to go wire to wire to bring the regular season crown in KBO.
Yes, it looks like they're easily favourites for the championships as well. We'll wrap it up there. Jiho, thank you for those updates, and hope you have a great week.
Okay, you too. Thanks for having me.
춤추듯 날린 꽃잎 위로 그대의 웃음 덧대어지면
My name is Son Tae-jin. You're now listening to Korea 24.
We've come now to our closing segment, Morning Edition Preview, where we take a look at some interesting features and reports coming out in tomorrow's newspapers. And for that, we have our staff editor, Richard Larkin, joining us in the studio once again. Richard, hello. It's good to see you.
Hello, Django.
Okay, so where are we headed to first?
First, we have an article in the national section of the Korea Herald. Choi Jae-hee writes about dogs and their owners in Seoul's Gangdong-gu district. They have teamed up to form a neighborhood patrol squad called Hechi Petrol. The patrol squad was named after an imaginary creature and guardian against fire and disasters called Hechi.
Okay, so tell us more about Hechi Petrol, you say. I guess it's a portmanteau of the words pet and patrol.
Right.
Rather than, yes, the gasoline.
Yes. The program was jointly launched in May by Seoul Metropolitan Autonomous Police Commission and the Gangdong-gu District Office. The article states that there are currently a total of 64 units, each consisting of a dog and its owner, patrolling neighborhoods. According to the SMAPC, they have made 430 reports so far, mostly to do with public safety or health hazards, such as fly tipping, roadside hazards, or drunk people sleeping on the street.
Actually, I think we've talked about this before on a Morning Edition Preview, perhaps not with you, Richard. But yes, I do remember it, although at the time I don't think there was a name yet. Can you remind us why the program was created in the first place?
Well, Kang Min-jun, a Seoul government official, said 15 million of Korea's 51 million population have pets. The program is aimed at improving the residential environment through teamwork between humans and animals. Another reason is that regular walks are good for the health of both the animals and their owners, so the owners are able to engage more in neighborhood issues while staying healthy. A recent study also supports these types of programs. It was conducted by researchers from Ohio State University, and they found that neighborhoods with more dogs saw their crime rates drop. People walking their dogs put more eyes on the street, which discourages criminals from committing both violent and non-violent crimes.
Wow, interesting. Okay, so there's essentially killing two birds with one stone with dog owners. They have to walk their dogs anyway, so they might as well give back to the local community by keeping their eyes open for any sorts of crimes and any sorts of oversights in the community.
Exactly.
Okay, we'll move on to our next story. What do you have for us next?
Next, we go to the entertainment and arts section of the Korea Times. According to Park Han-sol's article, a virtual reality film depicting the life of one of the most acclaimed poets in Korea's modern history has been officially invited to compete in the 79th Venice International Film Festival. The 23-minute-long Poet's Room is a historical fiction film that revolves around the poet Yoon Dong-ju.
Okay, so for any listeners who might not know much about Yoon Dong-ju, can you give us a brief background on this poet?
Well, the article states that he was best known for his words of resistance against Japanese imperialism during the country's colonization of Korea from 1910 to 1945. Sadly, he died at the age of 27 in February of 1945 after being imprisoned by the Japanese forces. This was just a few months before Korea's liberation. 9 of Yoon's iconic poems will be featured in Poets' Room, along with his rare handwritten manuscripts and Yonsei University's Pinson Hall, where the poet lived during his college days. These documents and buildings have all been designated as National Registered Cultural Heritage of Korea. There are some big names who helped make the movie, including director... director Gu Bong-suk, who was behind the production of VR content that reinterpreted the film set of Oscar-winning film Parasite. Poets' Room was also produced by Yang Jong-un, who led the opening and closing ceremonies for the 2018 Pyeongchang Winter Olympics.
Interesting. Okay. So you also mentioned that Poets' Room has been nominated for an award at the Venice International Film Festival. Can you tell us which award it's been nominated for?
Well, it has been selected to compete in the festival's Venice Immersion section. The section aims to showcase all types of extended reality works like installations, live performances and virtual worlds. A total of 30 projects are in competition this year, with 3 prizes up for grabs. These are Best Experience, the Grand Jury Prize and the Special Jury Prize. The winners will be announced at the festival's closing ceremony on September 10th. For people interested in watching the film, it will also be released domestically by the end of this year.
Interesting. Okay, we'll wrap it up there for Morning Edition Preview. Thank you for those stories, and we'll see you next time, Richard.
Thank you.
And that's where we wrap up our show today. Thank you for staying with us. We will be back as usual tomorrow. So do join us again then to continue to get your daily dose of Korean news analysis. Till then, we hope you have a great day. I've been your host, Kwon Jang-ho, and thank you as always for listening. Goodbye.